I'm Flavia Zimmerman from the Australian Institute of International Affairs in Western Australia, and today we have with us Professor Gordon Flake. Professor Flake is the CEO of the Perth US Asia Center, and today we are going to be discussing future political developments in the light of the Trump inauguration. Good having you with us, Professor Flake.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Professor Flake, in the eve of Donald Trump's inauguration, we already have quite significant controversy. Could you please tell us how do you perceive Donald Trump's leadership style and whether it could increase anti-American sentiment and compromise American interests in the world?
Well, let me start with a caveat, and that is, when it comes to observing American politics, I've not been exactly accurate for the last year. Like most analysts and journalists, I didn't see the Trump candidacy as a serious candidacy. I didn't believe there was any way he would actually win the Republican nomination, and I didn't believe there's any way he would actually win the presidency. And yet here we are 4 days away from the inauguration, and I should make it quite clear that I've been wrong regularly. One thing I think I've been right about, and it's something that living here in Western Australia, I have a different perspective on than I would have had I been in Washington, D.C., is precisely the question you're asking, which is the international reaction to his election. To really understand that, I think you have to go back 8 years and look at the election of Barack Obama. I spent the better part of 25 years in Washington working on Northeast Asia, China, Korea, Japan. And my colleagues and friends there at that time never believed that Barack Obama would ever be elected president, because clearly America is a fundamentally racist nation, would never elect a black man to be president. And in that context, the election of Barack Obama 8 years ago was a tremendous boon for American soft power around the globe, because, you know, to have someone elected who was, you know, raised by a single mother, who was, you know, spent some time in Hawaii and Indonesia, had the name Barack Hussein Obama, and it was African American, really said a lot about American democracy. And as a result, with the exception of a few countries for some very specific reasons, President Obama's popularity internationally has always been by orders of magnitude greater than his popularity at home. And so if you understand that, you can understand the tremendous bewilderment and dismay that has greeted the election of Donald Trump. So for countries like Australia or others, I mean, the weeks before the final election, when there were international opinion polls done, in every single country in the world, with the notable exception of Russia, you know, the public opinion poll favored Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump. Again, not surprising. What was surprising is even in countries like China, that was the case. And in most countries, it was by orders of magnitude, right? So more than double. And so we now have a situation where the decision of the American electorate is been greeted with a great deal of confusion. And if you look at the statements made by the president-elect since the election of concern for countries like Australia, where, you know, a key element of cooperation between Australia and the United States in the economic arena has been the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And so the unilateral decision by President-elect Trump to pull out of the TPP is obviously an issue of concern. Similarly, provocative statements vis-à-vis China and the South China Seas and Taiwan have threatened to destabilize the region. Again, something of concern to allies in the region, including Japan, of course, and Australia. And in recent days, statements regarding Europe and NATO being obsolete and the EU just being a vehicle for Germany to compete with the United States have really kind of shaken the faith of allies throughout the world. And then on top of that, you add, you know, the considerable concern and consternation related to the relationship between the president-elect and his campaign and his team with Russia. You have a situation where perhaps more than any time during my history, that this election is of concern globally.
Absolutely. One thing that I really would love to know your opinion, Gordon, having a deep experience in Washington and knowing very deeply American history, do you think there is any possibility of seeing some similarities between the current political environment in America now and the environment in the Weimar Republic? That's one thing that I would like to ask you. And another thing also, to which extent Trump's leadership style and I dare to say his agenda for America might undermine Barack Obama's legacy?
Well, let me start with the last question first. I mean, the election of Trump is, in many respects, a direct repudiation of Barack Obama's legacy, a reaction to it. It is a manifestation that a large portion of Americans, and not a majority, but a large percent of Americans, were deeply unsettled by issues of race, by issues of the economy, by immigration, by a change of the world that they knew. And in that context, it is, again, a reaction to a repudiation of Barack Obama and his legacy, and there's no way around that. And again, that's true in ways that are very concerning. When it does come to the role of women in society, the role of minorities on social issues, on, again, racial issues. I, as an Asianist, have not spent a lot of time focused on the Weimar Republic, but I would highlight one thing that's very important, and that is that if you talk to development specialists globally, they will tell you that democracy is more than voting. Democracy really is institutions, and whether that institution is what we call the fourth estate or a free press, or trust in the courts, in the legal infrastructure of society, or the roles of scholarship, and research and science in society, the role of government itself. We have seen a long period of time. This is not new, where one party over the other, but in general, there has been a broad deterioration of American faith in the institutions of democracy. And it began with, politicians realizing that it's easy to campaign against Washington, right? And then government is the problem. And then you start talking about the lamestream media, and you campaign against activist judges and the courts. And we have a situation where the traditional sources of public information and trust have deteriorated to the point. We've got to a point where, again, people are talking to this a post-truth America. The institutions of democracy are all significantly weaker. And it is in that climate that a man with the leadership style of Donald Trump, which is leadership by tweet, by very polemic, absolutist, almost outrageous statements, dominating a news cycle, was able to win. When it comes to his leadership style, that remains to be seen, because obviously there's a big difference between campaigning and governing. And the president-elect has proven himself very adept at dominating the news cycle. And he's proven himself very adept at cultivating and taking advantage of public angst, and again, cultivating and taking advantage of a desire to push against the other, be it the immigrant or be it Muslims or be it whoever you may. It's going to be very interesting to see whether he's able to make that transition between the campaign and running a country. And traditionally, there would have been a pivot immediately after the election where he would begin to shift into governing mode. And the earlier indications are, again, this goes back to your question of leadership style, that it's difficult to ascertain a governing mode. He's still very much in campaign mode. It has been a very volatile transition. And as a result, in something that is unprecedented, we've now actually seen the president-elect's public approval rating go down during the transition. And so it looks like that by the time he's inaugurated this Friday, he will have a public approval rating of about 35 to 36%. Mm. You know, essentially half of that what the outgoing president has, which is kind of inverse of what things normally are, and one of the lowest in modern history.
Mm. Well, absolutely. That's a matter of great concern. And Professor Flake, could you please give some remarks on the appointment of Rex Tillerson as the new Secretary of State, and to which extent the current evidence of his connections with Russia, to which extent are they strong and accurate? And if they are, how it could impact America's ability to lead and the Trump administration legitimacy to lead the country?
In a normal world, or in a normal time, the appointment of a CEO of a multinational energy company like ExxonMobil with close ties to Russia, where, you know, Rex Tillerson was given a, you know, friend of Russia award directly by Putin, that would be, you know, the dominant news story of the day. But candidly, of the broad ranges of issues of concern about the relationship between the president-elect, his campaign, and now his transition in Russia, this is probably one of the least concerning. It's mm-hmm. pretty open. It's pretty transparent. As the head of a large multinational, we know exactly what he wanted out of Russia. And, again, there's not a lot of ambiguity in that process. More importantly, in a period of time when there is actually some genuine concern about the qualifications of a range of the appointees that have been named thus far, you know, Rex Tillerson is kind of refreshingly an adult, right? You don't get nominated to be, or not nominated to be, you don't, you know, earn the position of CEO of a country of the scale of ExxonMobil without having core competencies. In his confirmation hearing, it was quite clear that there is a range of issues that he has not focused on and where he does not have deep expertise, human rights, you know, non-proliferation, these types of issues. But at the same time, I fully anticipate that, again, as a highly competent, highly intelligent, highly successful businessman, that he'll make that transition, I think, probably far better than the president-elect will, both in terms of demeanor and personality. And again, among the Russia issues that are out there, this one concerns me the least. Mm. The ones that I'm more concerned about are obviously the relationship between the president-elect himself, the election between his national security advisor, General Flynn, that level of communication, that mm. level of thing that I think is far more concerning than what Rex Tillerson has done.
And the connections of Donald Trump with Vladimir Putin and the Russian administration, to which extent on the long run it might compromise the balance of power established after the Second World War, and to which extent might compromise the Trump's administration legitimacy to rule.
Yeah, I would, there is a lot of concern in the national security establishment. There is a lot of concern in the human rights establishment. There's a lot of concern within, the broader foreign policy community. But perhaps nowhere is there more concern than there is in the intelligence community. Because, again, a good chunk of the last 2 weeks has been dominated by a ongoing battle between the president-elect and his team and the combined 17 organization intelligence community in the United States, who have both before the election, during the election, since the election, repeatedly kind of laid out their considered judgment, their consensus, what they've called conclusions about Russia's role in the campaign with a high degree of confidence that the president-elect has chosen to demean, to disregard, to reject, to mischaracterize. Mm-hmm. And therein lies a lot of concern mm-hmm. because it just speaks to it. If you look at countries in Europe right now that have had to deal with proximity with Russia, that's a deep concern. Mm-hmm. If you look at countries like Ukraine, where, again, Vice President Biden made a point of visiting this week just to make sure there's some degree of reassurance there. It's a deep area of concern. Richard Fontaine, who's the president of the Center for New American Security, and who was here in Australia earlier last year as a visiting fellow with our center, has just put out a wonderful op-ed, which basically said, look, there are inherent limitations as to how close the U.S.-Russia relationship can get, regardless of what Donald Trump may want. Actions taken by Russia that are directly against the interests of the United States. And one of the most interesting debates that's taken place, and this obviously is going to be interesting to an audience like the Australian Institute for National Affairs, is that, good relations are a means to an end. And that is a concept that the president-elect has not articulated and appears not to understand. In other words, the United States has no national interest in good relations with Australia just for the sake of good relations. We have an interest in good relations for close alliance coordination, for our shared concern, and potential cooperation in the Asia Pacific, because of our shared history and values, a whole range of issues. In a similar way, obviously, we would like to have good relations with Russia to help us move forward on non-proliferation, on climate change, on working in the Middle East. But again, good relations are a means to an end. And at this point, the president-elect just seems to think we want to have good relations for the sake of good relations. Yeah. And obviously, if those good relations mean the United States abandons its core values and positions, that's not good.
Well, absolutely. Thank you so much, Professor Flake. And regarding Donald Trump's recent remarks on Brexit and on NATO and claiming that NATO might be an obsolete organization, how do you think it will impact the balance of power established after the Second World War, and how it might impact the relationship of the U.S. with European nations, and particularly the current situation in Ukraine?
Big question. It's very difficult to see any positive developments out of this process. There is a broader trend globally of more kind of populist and nationalist leaders coming up. So clearly there are already correlations between the Brexit vote and the leaders of the Brexit vote and in the Trump campaign or the Trump phenomenon. There is growing concern that something similar to that might happen in France. So just this week, Marie Le Pen was in Trump Tower, again, an issue of concern. The decision on the part of the Italians to reject the plate of reforms offered up by their prime minister leads you to, this is a really unsettled period of history. I'm not yet clear as to how it affects broader balance of power, but at a core level, what was true with Brexit is what's true is what's happening with Trump right now. A Brexit meant a weaker UK and a weaker EU. Nobody can challenge that core calculus. In a similar way, what is happening right now with Donald Trump will mean weaker relationships between the United States and NATO, weaker relationships between the United States and Germany and the rest of the European Union, and in that context, a weaker Europe. And if you believe, as I do, that the European Union, for all its bureaucracy and issues, and NATO, have been forces for good for the better part of the last 50 years, then a weaker NATO and a weaker U.S. role, and a weaker ties between the U.S. and its allies in the region isn't good for the world. And it certainly isn't good in the context of developments that we've already seen in countries like with Ukraine. So part of this is we internationally, if you think back to 1992 and Francis Fukuyama's book, The End of History, we kind of thought that we'd reached this pinnacle where liberal democracies and capitalist economies, that was the model that we're going to be Star Trek soon, right? A federation of countries around the world. And this last year and a half, we've seen the fundamental weakening of global institutions. And what happens is when you are a smaller country, you know, if you return to an era of great power relations where might makes right, you know, you have the potential to see some of the disasters that we saw in the previous century and we swore that would never happen again.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Professor Flake. Thank you so much for your remarks. Now, one thing that I would like to know your opinion about, Australia and America have traditionally had a very close relationship. How do you think the appointment of the new Minister for Defence, James Mad Dog Mattis, and Robert Litzinger, as a new representative for trade might impact America-Australian relations?
Those are two very different questions and answers. Among the nominees of President-elect Trump to date, the one that has probably given me the greatest comfort has been the nomination of General Mattis. He is someone that you could have seen being nominated by a Hillary Clinton. You know, they called him the warrior monk, and some people have pulled out some outrageous statements he's made, given his mission at the time. But by all accounts, Democrat, Republican, he is serious, he is thoughtful, and in the course of his nomination hearings, he really charmed both sides, both the Democrats and Republicans in the Senate, and addressed many of their concerns. Notably, he was a discordant voice to the voice of the president-elect. He re-emphasized the importance of NATO, you know, re-emphasized his concern about the role Russia is playing in the world. And so there's a degree of independence there. And so I will tell you that from my perspective, the national security establishment, particularly the Republican national security establishment, is just holding on to Mad Dog Mattis, as Jim Mattis is this real one beacon of hope. In that process. Trade is actually a very different concern, just because there is such a sharp divergence between the direction that the president-elect and his nominee have pledged to go when it comes to trade agreements like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And so I think it's quite telling that this past weekend, Prime Minister Turnbull and Japanese Prime Minister Abe reiterated their support for their TPP. And going forward, I actually think that's absolutely correct. Mm. You know, this is something where, a unilateral decision by the U.S. to pull out of an agreement that 12 nations had negotiated together is harmful to U.S. image in the region, but it's also harmful to Australia's national security interests and their economic interests in the region. And so, to be honest, I fully think that allies like Japan and Australia, allies of the United States, should use this to hold the U.S. feet to the fire, to embarrass the Americans in that context. And so I applaud that move and I applaud that direction. But again, the direction where General Mattis is going and where the USTR is likely to go are very different directions.
Thank you very much, Professor Flake. Now, finally, just to wrap up our interview, I'd like to ask you, Professor Flake, how Donald Trump's remarks on Taiwan might damage U.S.-China relations, and having a strained U.S.-China relationship, how it might compromise the U.S.-Australia alliance and the positioning of Australia in the region?
Australia is not unique in this region in that it has a tremendous degree of economic dependency on China. And yet relies upon its relationship to the United States for its security. And you'll see that very similar to Japan and Korea and many of the states in Southeast Asia. So in that context, the region as a whole has for decades now had a great interest in working with the United States to continue to bring China into the international community, into the World Trade Organization, to negotiate those deals that would enable it to be, more proactive and involved in kind of what we had considered the kind of the standard rules and norms of international economic interactions in the region, and yet at the same time wanting to make sure that the risks of China becoming too powerful were hedged with the relationship to the United States. So I say that just to put this that question in context. Because of that, you know, all countries in the region, almost without exception, want a strong U.S. presence in the region. At the same time, they don't want a conflict between the U.S. and China. So you want enough, but not too much, if that makes sense. And so there's always a tension. Again, whether it's South China Seas or East China Seas or whatever issue you might want to deal with, including Taiwan, you want enough of a U.S. reassurance to dissuade China from becoming overly aggressive, hegemonic, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. But you don't want too much that it would lead to a crisis that would, you know, detrimentally impact your economic interests. And again, that's true for the entire region, not just Australia. The guiding principle of President Obama's foreign policy was often said to be, or summed up in a very short quote, which is, don't do stupid stuff. I think they probably use a stronger term than stuff, but that's the basic idea, right? So far, from what I can observe, the guiding principle of the Trump, at this point, transition and eventually administration seems to be the exact inverse, which is, do stupid stuff. In other words, just blow things up. You know, blow up the old system, shake things up. Let's make things differently. And understandably, some people, you know, have chafed at the idea that a democratic society like Taiwan, you know, can't have greater degrees of latitude diplomatically, internationally, and freedom. And they have chafed at the idea that China can determine what we can do and who we can talk to and when the rules of protocol. And so you've got these long-standing established protocols or, you know, procedures you understand in terms of how you deal with countries like, you know, China and how you deal with the sensitive issues like Taiwan that, again, the Trump administration has decided, again, I'm one who's very skeptical that this was actually a decision. Like many of these things, it's more a series of just kind of actions and statements and then an attempt to justify them later, has already now raised the level of concern about the U.S.-China relationship to levels I have never seen in my professional career. And that is just because those issues that China regards as core to its national interest in Taiwan is first and foremost among those are now in question. And the president-elect can repeatedly now has referred to his basically everything being on the table, everything being negotiable. And so it's going to be a bumpy ride.
Well, great pleasure talking to you, Professor.
Well, it's my pleasure. Obviously, stay tuned. All these issues are going to be playing out a lot in the coming weeks and months.
We have some promising times ahead.
Concerning times ahead. Looking for the promise.
Thank you very much for being with us. And for more information, please visit our website, www.internationalaffairs.com.au. Thank you.